Hey everyone, welcome back to the Above Board Podcast. It is episode 114, and you've got your co-host, John Kennedy, along with The Rich B. Do we still call you that, Rich? Is that what you're going by these days?
Well, only people that like really love me call me The Rich B. No, you can call me let's just be Rich and John. The Rich okay. B.
I like it. I'm so used to saying it that I started calling myself the John K.
I think you should be the John K.
I don't know.
So then Matt would be the Matt M.
Roll off the tongue for some reason.
The Madam.
Well.
Oh, the Madam. Oh, that's it. Terrible. I apologize.
What are we talking about today, dude?
You know, so a couple of things happen. You know how things line up and they just make perfect sense? So Two things happened. First of all, number one, and you'll get the irony in that in a second. Number one, my wife and I have this device that we bought. We actually have two of them that we use in our house, that it's a diffuser, like an oil scent diffuser, and it uses scents from high-end hotels. So like, you know, you're going to those like nice hotels, the lobby always has like a certain, I mean, I stay in some like crappy hotels, so my hotels usually smell like dirty feet and old coffee. But when you rarely get to stay at some like really nice hotels, they have, whether you realize it or not, scent machines that have a certain kind of signature scent. So the one that we've really liked is called The One, and it's from a hotel in Miami, strangely called The One. So that's the scent. Like if you were to walk down the street and come into my house this weekend, you would smell that scent. And you know, we usually have it going a couple times a day. Interestingly enough, the other day I was on Instagram, and Ed Milet, who we both love, he's an outstanding dude. He had this whole thing that I sent you, this like video where he talks about it. I think the way he referenced it is, in every family, there's always the person that's the one. And he references it like, you know, you're the one who's been successful. You're the one who has the money. You're the one who solves the problems. You're the one that's going to break generational trauma. You're the one, you know, et cetera. So both those things kind of collided in my brain. And I thought like, maybe we should talk about being the one.
I love that. So there's so many things I want to say already. Number one, what you describe. Oh, number one, you see, I did that there.
Yeah.
That's called scent branding, which we have that at Canterpath, but I would like to know the diffuser. If you could send me that, I'd like to know the one that you use, because we did this last year. We had a contest. Everyone at our company had to come up with their own signature scent. And then we did a blind test. We went to like this place called Artifact Candle, I think, in Orlando. And you could pull from all these scents, come up with your own scent. And then we voted, and that whoever won, which I will give Matt the kudos here,
Madam.
Is his signature scent.
It's Madam.
The Madam scent, his signature scent is the scent of Canterpath Financial. So when you walk into our office, that's the scent you smell, but we don't have that thing that you're referring to that diffuses it, that hotel.
Okay, so
going into a nice hotel lobby because of that. Like it hits you with that scent. Yeah.
The company is called Sentiment. They're not a sponsor of ours, but Sentiment, S-C-E-N-T-I-M-E-N-T, Sentiment. And we have two of them. And actually, my wife just bought one as a gift for somebody as well, and they love it. And you could choose the different scents. And the one that we chose is the one from this beautiful hotel in Miami.
I realized the risk that we ran sounding like we were doing like a sponsor. That was like, we definitely didn't do that on purpose.
Yeah, they're not giving us a dime. I've spent a lot of money on them.
I just got excited about that because I'm like, oh, we do that. We're doing scent branding now.
Yeah, no. So yeah, Sentiment, if anybody wants to send this to the company and let them know we gave them a shout out, that's great. So let's talk a little bit about that. In your world and in my world, I think it jumps out. Can I just break that down, why I think so? So in the world of healthcare, those of your clients and our listeners who are the paramedics, the nurses, the physical therapists, the psychologists, the physicians, et cetera, you tend to be the one that everyone calls in your family when little Clarice has a headache, or Jesus twisted his ankle, or when, you know, dad's having this weird kind of chest pain, or you're in the ER and do you know anybody that works at this hospital that can get us in a little bit faster? You're always the one that everybody goes to for the medical advice. On the other hand, some of your clients or you might relate to the fact that you would be the one when somebody is, hey, John, you know, I've got this debt issue, or, you know, for you guys, for you and Matt and Michael and your team, when somebody's got a question about money or finances or budget, or is this a good deal on a car, or is this a good deal on life insurance? At the same time, some of your clients, usually the people that have the discipline to go to a financial planner, oftentimes I would guess, and you tell me if I'm wrong, tend to be the people that are maybe a little bit more responsible with their money or a little bit more focused on it. So it just might so happen that they might also be the one in their family that people go to when the, you know, fifth brother-in-law of your sister, fifth husband of your sister has, you know, decided to like open up another business. Now he's going to have a cotton candy food truck, and can they borrow $10,000 from you, or what have you. So it's basically when Ed Milet talked about it, he was more like, you know, you're the successful person in your family and you're the one that's broke the generational habits. But it could be that, or it could be when you're the person that everybody in life always goes to in your family or in your life to solve your problems or to fix your stuff, and the pressure that that puts on you. That's kind of the road I wanted to take it down. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And he also wrote a book last year called The Power of One More, which is connected to all of this. And it's a little bit in a different vein, but similar ideas. And I think, I don't know, I would say I tend to agree in the world of what I do and working with families, the type of family who, which by the way, you know, there's this misnomer out there that you have to be very wealthy to have a financial planner or a financial advisor. That is not true. You don't have to have assets accumulated yet to employ somebody. But what I find is the type of person who says, you know what, I don't know this stuff. Like I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And I'm going to deploy a financial person to help me in this area. They do tend to be the one in their family. And I don't know what that is. I think they tend to be the person that can troubleshoot things, the person that you go to. This quote that my mom always uses, actually, which is, I don't know where she loosely quotes it from, but she always says, if you want something to get done, ask a busy person.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot, and it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah.
And that's probably what this type of person is. You know, they're very busy. They're outsourcing things in their life that they know they can't do, like maybe their financial, like the financial arena, but they tend to be the one in the family, the person you go to when there's a problem, who do you call? And I think that's a very empowering place to be. I think that I tend to think that I serve that role for a lot of families in the financial arena. I get to be the one that they call when there's when they're deciding on, do we buy this next home? Do we make this decision inside of our business? When should we retire? I love serving that role though. And David DeSell, who you've talked to, you've actually been on his podcast and interviewed him on ours too. He talks about that a lot, like not forgetting to embrace, like having a level of humility to embrace, like maybe some days you're tired because everyone's coming to you and asking you those questions, and everyone seemingly needs you and needs time with you and needs your advice. But what a great opportunity you have to be the one to help other people. And when you have that level of humility to it, I think that that's pretty cool too, to realize like I'm helping people. And like, for me, that's something that I think about a lot when it comes to being maybe the one in this arena of life, the way that you are for people in the work that you do, Rich.
Right. And you know, if you think it's situational too. It just occurred to me, I was thinking about, I have two older brothers who I love very much. And just like you and like Matt, you know, I lost my dad at a pretty pivotal time in a young man's life. And both my older brothers have always sort of functioned as the father figure for me when I was younger. So they were the ones, like my brother Jack was a real estate agent. So he's the one that helped me find my first house and negotiate the deal and don't do this and don't do that. And this is how, you know, I had him to walk me through that. My brother Bob, you know, has been able to give me advice on different things as well in life. So they've always been there for me in that moment. And I'm the little brother. But yet 2 years ago, when my mom was dying, I was the one. So I was the one that was local. I was the one that was taking care of mom. I was the one that was making all the medical decisions. I was the one that was with her when she passed away. So it's interesting also that being the one can shift depending on the situation, right? You know, so you and I as friends, I would go to you, well, I do because you're my financial advisor, but I would go to you even for the smallest idea, you know, the smallest thing, or Matt, you know, and say, hey, you know, what about this? But how many times have you guys called us, you know, with your kids, like, hey, you know, Ellis Fever is doing this right now, or this just happened, or what does this rash look like, right? I mean, in the past, that was Dawn and I, because we're both nurses. I think we all, maybe within our family, depending on our expertise or our experience or who we are and what we do, fall into the role of being the one. I want to dig into, just for the brief time that we have, what it feels like. And I agree with that, embracing being the one, because it is a privilege, right? It for me, it was an honor to be able to have my older brothers look, I don't know if I want to say look up to me, but look to me to handle the situation with my mom. And it was an honor and it was sacred to be there for her in her last hours and her last days. But there is a little bit of pressure, and there's a little bit of maybe some anxiety that comes in life when you are always the fix-it person. I have a friend, I won't say his name because I don't know if he wants me to say his name, but I have a friend, we've actually talked about this. He's just like the greatest guy. And I'll say his name is Frank. Okay.
And so I was going to say, does he go by the John K? Is it? No.
No, he does not.
But he said he's the greatest guy. So I was like, you are the greatest. Talking about me.
You are the greatest guy. And I realized that I have a lot of really cool friends named John in my circle. It's very interesting. John's tend to be the, like, my buds. But anyway, let's say his name's Frank. I always teasingly call him Fix It Frank, because he's the one that his family calls when, you know, the young nephew got in trouble. He's the one when the family calls when, oh, we don't have enough money to buy so-and-so her prom dress. He's the one that this broke in the house, can you come and fix it? And he takes great pride in that, and he's amazing at it, but it does take a toll on you. It does take a toll on you when you're the person that everybody looks to. So maybe talking a little bit about, how do we balance that? What are some ways where maybe we talk about boundaries, where we talk about burnout, where we talk about, you know, having conversations, and where we talk about sometimes delegating in life and in business, because it can also be at work, right? How many people can, listening to this, can relate to the fact that they're the one? You know, I know as a nurse, there was always the one in the ICU who's the super smart nurse that when we were like, hey, what do we do with this situation? She always had all the answers. But that can take a toll on you as well.
Can. I think that is something you scale to and work to be a leader. Because what you described in that nursing situation is like, that's, whether there's a title there or not a title there, that is like the team lead or the head nurse that people
formal
are going
or,
to.
Yeah, formal or informal leaders. There's leaders like
a lot of times probably is informal, right?
Yeah, many times. Many times can be.
Yeah. I think something that comes up for me there, and I mentioned this a moment ago, but there's, because I could talk out of both sides of my mouth here. So we could talk about boundaries and burnout, like you just shared. I could also talk about having that level of humility to, like, for me, like I worked so hard to be in this role for families. I wanted to be the person that they picked up the phone and called and said, I'm navigating this issue, or I lost a family member and I need help. I embraced that role and I worked towards that role. And so now that I'm here, you know, it's like, you could have days, like you said, where you experience burnout. I'm not good at this or perfect at this, but I try to meet that with a dose of humility of like, this is the role I was meant to serve. Like I'm going to lean into this, and yes, it makes me feel good, as it probably does for most people. When you get to help somebody, like when you help somebody out, you also feel good about it. So I think there's, pair that with a level of humility, but you're not wrong. I mean, there is burnout that's associated with this type of stuff, which I think is kind of where you were going now.
Yeah. And let's talk about, I think, because in the professional setting, I think it's maybe a different scenario than where I kind of want to take it down the road more of how do you in your personal life, because I think you can relate and not compare with this. If we talked about it from a personal perspective, I think all of the intelligent people that listen to our podcast can immediately be able to take this perspective and layer it on top of a professional situation. Let's talk about a couple of ways to, in life, okay, to manage when you're always the one, when you're always the fix-it Frank, when you're always the one that everybody goes to in your personal life, in your family, in your circle of friends, that people are always looking to you. Again, there is a humility and there's an honor and that's a pat on the back, right? If you always came to me for advice on whatever, you know, fitness or diet or parenting, of course I would be honored by that. But if I've got seven people doing that and my entire family does that, and I'm always the person that everybody leans on for everything, that does get tiring. I mean, from everything, from you're always the one whose house, you know, oh, you've got the bigger house, so we'll do Christmas at your house all the time. Or you're the one with the SUV, so can you be the one to pick up the kids? You're the one that, you know what I'm saying? Like that kind of thing. Because I talk to a lot of people when I travel and just even, you know, even the sessions that I do, where people have these personal conversations with me and they talk about how draining it can be to have so many people depending upon you to be the problem solver. That's kind of the route I wanted to go down.
Well, that's a good question, or that's a good point that you pose. I don't know if I'm kind of curious, and we'll talk through it a little bit, because I think those are definite burdens that people bear. But I mean, like, this is a weird thing to throw back, but like, what's the alternative? Like, if you're not going to step up in your family, who is? And it, like, I'm saying this to you or mm-hmm. or to anyone listening to this that's like self-identifying, as they're like, man, I'm the one. Like, I'm the one that everyone calls. If you don't step up, what's the alternative? And I don't know. I think about those things sometimes and I think, well, it not that it forces me to step into that role and lean into it again and again, but it helps me get there. It helps me rationalize, like, oh, like, someone needs my help. I need to do this type of thing. Yes, there's burnout from that, but I guess if I threw it back to you, like, what's the alternative?
I kind of feel like there's a difference between helping other people and being taken advantage of. So that's the fine line. So I kind of feel like the way I would look at helping other people is helping others, I've seen defined as you're not doing it to earn status with them or to be part of their life or to get something back from them. And I think being used is when you'll pretty much do anything for someone at any time because you feel the sense of obligation and there's no limits to it. I mean, in a way, it's an awkward definition, but I think in life, it's wonderful and it's altruistic to help somebody, but at some point you have to wonder, is your help making things better or worse for them? And that's maybe a litmus test that you would apply. Can I give you a kind of a weird example? Sometimes I'll catch this show on TV where they'll follow a person who is addicted, you know, an alcoholic or a drug addict. And there's usually, you know, there's a therapist involved and they have, you know, a meeting, you know, it's called intervention, I think. And many people have probably watched it. And one of the dynamics that I've always noticed in it, it's 90% of the time there's somebody who loves that person who believes that they're helping them by enabling them. So we'll make it a son, and he lives with his parents and he is using substances, and they interview the mom, and the mom is, you know, driving him to his dealer to get the substances. And you're watching the show and you're feeling very judgy, and she's, you know, I drive him here and I know it's bad, but then at least I know where he is and I know where he's getting it from. And, you know, I just worry he's going to overdose. And there's that part of you that it breaks your heart. And the judgy part of you is like, well, you shouldn't do that. You should just tell him no. And usually when they get the interventionalist in, they give them hard choices. And they tell that mom, you've got to stop driving him to his dealer. Well, if I don't, then, you know, he's going to be on the street. Well, then you need to let him be on the street. But if I do that, then this is going to happen. Well, you have to let that happen. You have to let them hit rock bottom so that they can. And you know, I always find myself in these situations, like, God forbid I'm ever in those shoes. And some people listening might be in those shoes or have been in those shoes. But that person is convinced they're helping their son. But are they helping their son by getting them access to their drug that's their addiction that is slowly killing them? Would they be more helpful at some point to say, well, I'm not going to drive you to your dealer, but I will drive you to rehab, or I'm not going to drive you to the bar, but I will take you to an AA meeting, or I'm not going to drive you over here, but I will take you into therapy. And I use that as kind of an extreme example, but I know so many people who get so taken advantage of by family and loved ones. You know, like you talk to them and you're like, oh, what's up? Oh, you know, my nephew's here for the weekend. Oh, that's great. Yeah. You know, my brother's, you know, he's got this new girlfriend and they want to go, this is the fourth time, you know, he's gone on vacation. He's always kind of dropping his kid off here. And there's the part of that family member that that they're doing that because they love their nephew. But there's the other part that they're enabling their brother to make these continual bad choices and fail to live up to his responsibilities as a parent. So that's, I guess, where I'm saying when we're always the one, there sometimes has to be a time where we look and we have to ask ourselves, are we being taken advantage of? Is somebody using me? Am I the ATM, you know, person for my family? Am I the babysitter for my family? Am I, you know, always the person doing everything? And while it's great to help people out, when is it too much?
Hey, thanks for tuning into our show. Are you looking for shorter daily episodes of Above Board delivered straight to your Amazon Alexa? Join Canterpath 365 and get our daily brief with market updates, financial news, and mini podcast snippets like from today. Sign up now at canterpath365.com and we'll see you there. Yeah, so there's a healthy and an unhealthy version of this. The healthy version, I think that's where, not yeah. Disconnect isn't the right word, but that's how I was framing this, was like, oh, I want to be a champion for the effort of somebody leaning in to this leadership role in their family, in their household, for their community or whatever. But then there's the unhealthy side of this where we're enabling, or like in the example you just gave, or people are taking advantage of our kindness or our time. And I know this doesn't totally correlate, but I did a podcast on Above Board 10 episodes ago. So it was 104 mm-hmm. and it was called The Pursuit of Healthy Selfishness. And it was actually, a lot of it was my own anecdotes of struggles of like trying to, how do you deal with it when it crosses this line? Like, 'cause there's a difference between being selfish, which is very, you know, neglectful of others and being self-absorbed, versus right. simply prioritizing your own well-being, so that, and when you prioritize yourself in a healthy way, you're available for your community, you're available for other people. So it's this idea of like, there's this pursuit of healthy selfishness that's not bad for you. So the way you're framing it, yeah, man, that's like, those are everyone's struggles. I think anyone listening to this podcast is self-motivated. They're probably like identifying potentially with being the one, you know, they right. they see themselves as that role in the family. And as you're saying these things, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I've been taken advantage of a lot. That's probably some of the risks you run of being the one, though. The person
think so.
In your household, like, there's good and there's unhealthy to it.
There is. And, you know, it's the old, what's the old adage? Give a man a fish, you feed him for the day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for life. And I think too many people are fishmongers. They're just out there throwing fish at everybody. And sometimes it's the, oh, I'll just do it myself, it'll be easier. You know, so instead of teaching your, and of course, I'm just using silly examples, none of these are real, but, you know, teaching your sister how to, I'm trying to think of like something that somebody would go to you all the time, teaching your sister how to fix something on her computer. Okay. She always, you know, you're always the one, you're the IT expert. So your sister's always like, can you just look, just help me out. It keeps on locking up. And you're like, well, I've shown you how to do this. You hit Control Alt Delete, then you do that. Just do it for me. And you're like, okay, it's just easier if I just do it myself, because she's so impatient. But when it's constant and it's all the time and they become dependent upon you, then there has to come a time where you sit down and you say, am I helping this person by doing it for them? Or would I be empowering this person if I showed them how to do it? Am I helping this person by paying for this for them? Or would I empower this person by showing them some other ways to manage their money so they could afford to pay this themselves? So I think that help is something that is for emergencies. And I think empowering is something that is more for the long term and when you really care about somebody. If I care about you, I would help you. But if I deeply care about you, at some point I want to empower you. Does that make sense?
Well, those are life's tough choices, I think, is identifying when we've crossed that line from, are we helping somebody, or is this a time to help them, or is this a time to empower them? And I'm curious maybe how you deal with that, because I would imagine you're the one in your family that people go to. And whether you gave at the beginning of this, it was like circumstances, like if it's nursing type stuff or healthcare. Right. But I think you're the one in a lot of ways in your household. And how do you deal with that if somebody comes to you in a situation where, like the one you just described, like I'm just helping them over and over again, and really I'm not actually helping them. I need to now empower this person to learn how to do it themselves. How do you even broach that conversation with somebody? Because that's not easy.
I think it comes down to the three P's. I think it's person. I think it's predictability. And those would be the first two. So who the person is, predictability, and...
PP, got it.
What's that?
PP, those are the first two. Where's the third?
Speaking of number one. But yeah, person, predictability, and priority. So I think, is it the same person doing it all the time? Can you predict what they're going to ask for and what they're... I'm sorry. And I messed up. It's person, predictability, and pattern. That's what I meant. So is this the same person all the time? Is it the same sister, the same brother, et cetera? Is it going to be a predictable ask? Oh, here comes John Kennedy again. He's got more weak than he has money again. And is there a pattern? Is it always about money? Is it always about relationships? So I think when you look at person, predictability, and pattern, I think that will tell you a lot. And that's when you start to figure out, okay, is it time to set boundaries? If it's a one-off or a two-off, you know, like you've never asked me for money, but let's say one day you're going out for dinner with Jackie and you realize you're running late, you don't have time to hit the ATM, you know there's valet parking at this place, and you want to have a $5 bill to tip your valet parker, you might call me and say, hey, bro, do you happen to have any cash in the house? Can I borrow $5 from you? Which, of course, I would just give to you. I wouldn't take back because I love you. But that would be normal. Now, if every single day or every week you're asking me for cash, then now it's the person, it's John, it's predictability. It's going to be an ask for something. I can predict what he's going to do. And there's a pattern to this. It always seems to be at the end of the week, or it always seems to be connected to the fact that his wife is spending all of his money. So I think those are three of the things that you take into mind. So you sit there and, like, people that are listening to this think, okay, who's the person in my life that always asks for my help? And then you write that person's name down. Okay. So it's so-and-so. It's Marlene. Sorry, Marlene, if you're listening, it's Marlene. And is it predictable? Is it always something that I know it's going to be on a Friday? And is there a pattern? It's going to be related to money. And I think if you know that, then you know you're being taken advantage of. And you know it's time to stop helping and start empowering. So I'll pause to get your thoughts on that.
Well, that's a really good exercise. I'm glad you made that tangible for people, because otherwise, leading up to this, I was thinking, this is a feel thing. Has this happened before? Is it monetary based? Is it time based? Are they asking for my time for something over and over again? And so you've created a little bit of a system, which it sounds like you've adopted this before for yourself, but you've created a system where you can very quickly run through this litmus test of, okay, is this a pattern? Has this happened before? Is it the same person over and over again? Is there predictability to it? I like that a lot. I think couldn't have imagined you would have answered my question better than that. So kudos to you. That was really good.
I get a free Canterpath t-shirt.
You get a star.
Nice. Yes. Well, yes. And so then, you know, what do you do with that? So if you recognize person, pattern, and predictability, now you take action. So the action would be, I sit down with the person. I tell them, hey, I noticed that you only text me on Fridays. You just say that. And the person goes, well, what do you mean? Because they already know what you mean. So that's the predictability. And you break the pattern, or you break into the pattern. You say, well, it seems to be on Fridays is when you get paid. And it always feels like that's when you ask me for a little extra money. So I'm happy to help you with this situation because I don't want you to run out of gas on your way back and forth from work. So I know you need $25 for gas. I can't imagine $25 would get anybody enough gas to get anywhere these days, but whatever, hypothetically. But I want to talk to you a little bit about how you're kind of budgeting yourself, because I remember last weekend at our, you know, family birthday gathering, you were showing everybody your new Gucci sunglasses and you said you got them on sale for $250. I can't help but think to myself, you already have a pair of sunglasses, but it's Friday again and you're asking me for gas money. So 250 times, you know, 25 times 10 is 250, is it? Yeah, it is, right? Please tell me yes. Anyway, so it, you know, I'm wondering if maybe we didn't do that, then you'd have 10 Fridays of gas. You know, so I think that helps you guide you in the conversation, because what people are thinking is, well, yeah, Rich, yeah, John, I'm the one and people always come to me for, but I don't know how to say no. I don't know how, I feel bad if I say no. So then you break it down into, you know who the person is, you let them know it's predictable, and then you share the pattern with them. Let's give them a percentage chance that they may not even realize that this is what they're doing. But now you can have a real conversation with them, and that enables you to back into how do you help them? How do you step them back from borrowing money? How do you step them back from the same dumb relationship choice that they're constantly making? Because everybody that they date within 3 weeks, they're calling you and telling you the person cheated on them. The person got drunk and did X, Y, and Z. So you're always dating people that drink too much and cheat, you know? So it enables you to talk about the pattern and the predictability of it. And I think that empowers you, because it kind of, doesn't it take the pressure off the one? Because it's not your predictability, it's not your pattern, it's there. So you're almost putting it back on the person that's taking advantage by showing them and exposing. And if they are being narcissistic and purposeful about it, you're basically calling them out. You're saying, dude, I see your pattern, I see your predictability. And it might cause the person, if they're doing it on purpose, to kind of own it. Or if they're not doing it on purpose, to go, my gosh, I didn't really think about that. And I didn't think, and then also it's having that real conversation and saying, hey, look, I just want to let you know what pressure this is putting on me. Because understand, if I'm giving you $25 for gas, that's $25 I don't have right now. And maybe I might need that down the road. So let's talk about a long-term solution to these frequent short-term problems that are very predictably with a pattern occurring with you.
You're so good at communication and conflict. So, I mean, hearing this stuff, I really love it, because I think anyone who, again, self-identifies as the one has had pretty much this exact conversation. Insert different names and different amounts and maybe different frequencies or scenarios, but ultimately we've all had these conversations, which I think, so I'm really big on, especially with my kids, like I'm teaching them the importance of ownership of something. If you make a mistake, you know, you need to own that. And I think ownership of being the one, if you self-identify as that in your household or in your family or amongst your friends or peers, is requires you to be able to navigate these complicated conversations at times. Because if all you do is enable people, like that extreme example you gave just a moment ago about the parent who's tough. I mean, that man, that's gut-wrenching to think about. And when anyone that's outside, removed from that scenario, hears that, they'd go, oh, you're just enabling. You're not the one, you're just enabling that person. Well, I think the differentiator between an enabler and then the one in the household or in the family or in the friend group is that that person can have those sometimes difficult, uncomfortable conversations that you just phrased. At least that's what comes up for me. I think that's an important recognition of the balance of, I still think there's more good than bad to being this person. And I like serving in this capacity. And it's funny, because just translating this to my kids, maybe shifting gears a little bit. When I, you know, at nighttime, we kind of have the same routine, and it's either we read a book or tell a story. And I've gotten really good at storytelling, by the way. I think you're rubbing off on me. You're the one, Rich. You're rubbing off on me here, but I've gotten good at storytelling, and my kids are like, oh, Dad, you tell the best stories. And can you tell another one? So I tell these funny stories, and then like we say a prayer, and I'll a lot of times, especially my older one, Ella will know this, but I'll still, you know, I'll kiss him goodnight and I'll say, you're the one. And you know, it's so fun, because like my son will look back at me and he'll go, you're the one. And then I'll say, you're the one. And we just say that back and forth. It's super sweet. And then my daughter's, you know, been more inquisitive. Like, what does that mean? You know, and so I try to explain to her, you know, when I'm saying that to her, what I mean is some of the generational stuff, like there's baggage that we carry as parents that we don't want to pass on to our kids. So some of it's like, I want to see you fly. I want to see you excel. And you're going to do that. You're the one. But also when my daughter asks, I'm like, you're going to make a difference in people's lives. You're going to be there for people. I see it now in school. I see the way that you act as a leader and the way you help your friends and your kindness and your thoughtfulness.
Truly.
You're the one. You're the one. And then it's sweet because then, my daughter's like, isn't Jesus the one? I'm like, yeah.
Okay. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Well,
those are fun conversations to have. But I guess what I'm placing is like back on the positive side of being the one, it's a good role to embrace.
There's a lot of positive. And as far as to reflect upon what you just said about baggage, I always jokingly say the only baggage we should ever pass on to our kids should say Louis Vuitton on it, right? Like maybe you don't want to pass on all that other baggage. And the other thing I would say also is, if you truly love somebody, it's not always giving them what they want. It's giving them what's best for them. And sometimes what I want is not what's best for me. I might want, as a teenager, to go on a spring break trip with a bunch of friends who party a lot. But my dad might say no to me because he knows that this group of kids get into some trouble and that's not what's best for me. Right? You've got clients that might want to push the boundaries and buy a house that's maybe $200,000 more than they can actually afford. But what you advise them is what's best for you is to buy this other house and put this other money away. I might have friends who might want to, start powerlifting, and I might know that that's great, but what's best for them is to just start a workout because they've not lifted weights in 7 years, right? So I think when you're the one, it's sometimes the people that are the one believe that what they're doing is out of love, but what they're doing is they're fulfilling somebody's wants rather than meeting somebody where they need to be. And I do think that there is great power and responsibility in being the one. It's also sacred and it's an honor, but there is just as much wisdom in withholding things from someone as it is in giving them something as well. An open hand can also be empty, right? An open hand can be empty, but its purpose is not to hand somebody a thing. Its purpose is to take hold of the other person's hand and show them where they need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't we quote Spider-Man 2 weeks ago with great,
we did.
With great power comes power great responsibility. And yeah. That's how I feel in the context of this conversation too. I have a lot of clients who will share their intention to, like, let's say they're my age, they have young kids now, but their intention is to build, grow and develop all this wealth for their next generation. Like they want to give it to their kids and their grandkids. And oftentimes I remind people that giving a gift of some tremendous size like that, whatever it is that's meaningful to them to give a gift to, a lot of times that comes at the detriment of the person receiving it. Like you're just, it's back to the enabling conversation. You're not giving them a gift. You're giving them, you're enabling some of their bad habits. If they didn't have to work for, let's say, those assets or those dollars or that life that they want to live and you just give it to them, that's not what you want to see. And so when you're the one, you recognize that responsibility of being there for somebody and building them and coaching them and training them and giving them all, like a lot of this practical advice that you're talking about now with these hard conversations, instead of just giving, instead of just making it easier for them. That's not, being the one doesn't mean making it easier for the next
whoever. You ask yourself, especially when there's pattern, am I helping or am I empowering? And again, help is an emergency situation. Hey, John, I have a flat tire. Can you come and pick me up? My car's being towed. You're helping me there. Empowering me is, John, I've run out of gas again. Can you go buy some gas and pour it in my car, please? And this is the eighth time I've done it in the last 10 months. There's a difference, right? So I'd ask people that if you're the one, understand that sometimes you got to be the one and done. Sometimes you've got to be, I am not doing this for you this time, or I'm letting you know, setting an expectation, this is the last time and I mean it, and then you stick by it. Or you say, I will do this for you, but I see a pattern and I want to help you break this pattern So part of you being able to get this thing I'm about to give you, the way that you earn it is you're going to have to demonstrate to me that you're breaking this pattern. And I think that that is truly being the one who says the uncomfortable things, the one who cares enough about somebody to not only use your own tools to fix the problem, but help them understand how to use their own tools to fix the problem. Being the one who takes the risk of angering people, but you're doing it for the right reasons. And being the one that loves somebody enough to understand that it's not always giving them what they want, but it's giving them what's best for them.
Amen, brother. I'm smiling because I'm going to ask, Rain is going to help me on the post edit with this podcast. And I thought to myself, how many times do we say the word one? So many times.
It should be like either a drinking game or the innocent version that I used to play. Cause you know, I don't drink is a cookie game. Every time a person says a word, you have to eat a cookie. Cause you know, I love my sugar. So that's my,
that could be worse. That could result in weight. I mean, your macros would be on if we did. Hey, listen, that. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to summarize something that you said that really has landed for me is, am I helping someone or am I empowering someone? I think that's the, like, I like the PPP, which you said, person, what was it? Person, predictability, and pattern. I love that as like a litmus test to go through things, but asking yourself maybe just the simple question situationally when you come across it next is, am I helping this person or am I empowering this person?
And again, understanding, because I don't want to be misunderstood. Of course, there's always, you know, your kid falls and twists their ankle. You don't go, am I empowering them by getting ice and picking them up and carrying them to the car? Of course you want to help somebody in an emergency. It's just the common sense thing when you look at the three P's and understand, am I always helping or is it time to start empowering? And ultimately, I don't know about you, but if you said to yourself, I want to be helped today, or if you said to yourself, I want to be empowered today, ask yourself listening, which would you choose? There you go.
Well said, buddy. I love it.
There we go for being the one on the Above Board podcast. And we want to thank Ed Milet for stimulating our brains to think about being the one. And we want to thank the one hotel in Miami for smelling so good. And we want to thank Sentiment for providing this. All non-sponsors, by the way. These are just people that we're just giving shout outs to. But most of all, we want to thank our listeners and all the folks who are so kind to listen to this podcast. You are the one for us, and we appreciate it. Please share this podcast on all of the various podcast platforms that you might be listening to. Share it with some friends that might need to hear it. Share it with somebody else who you know is the one, or share it with the one in your life because maybe they need to hear it. So with that, we just want to say thank you again for listening. Thanks for being here on the Above Board podcast. You have an amazing day.